Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. And today's episode, I sit down with Andrew Marlin of Watch House. And, well, it's a lovely conversation. We do this one over Zoom. Even though we're at the tail end of lockdown when this was recorded, we've done it over Zoom because, well, he's in America and I'm in the UK. And so if I want to speak to these amazing artists, then as much as I love you lot and I want to give you the best listening experience I can't afford to keep flying to the States just to have a 40-minute pod chat. I don't think the family would be on board with that. So we do it over Zoom. And thanks to my producer, 76, you're going to get a lovely, warm podcast experience. A few other thank yous. I'd like to thank Scroobius Pip and all my bros and sisters at the Distraction Pieces Network, which is a wonderful hub of amazing podcasts. And I feel very proud to be part of that. And thank you to you listeners, because you're the ones that make this, you know, this is what I make this for. You know, I adore talking records with people, and the fact that you lot have listened and helped me sort of develop it and grow it to the fact that I'm talking to, you know, so many of the people I grew up listening to records from that, you know, that are big inspirations and heroes of mine. And all of these things have happened because the podcast has grown. And the reason that's grown is because of the support. So just a big thank you to you lot for continuing to just support it, say nice things and listen. Because, yeah, if you get a fraction of the joy listening as I do having these chats, then we're all in a good place. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then when you get to the end of today's chat with Andrew, then go and explore the archives, because there's over 300 episodes available now, and it's a very, very diverse array of people that I've had guest over the last couple of years. Rock bands like Tommy Lee from Motley Crue and Foo Fighters and Papa Roach, through to hip-hop artists like Yellow Wolf, Chuck D of Public Enemy, through to producers like Butch Vig and Fatboy Slim, through to some incredible actors, Joe Hartley, Maxine Peake, Thomas Turgoose, Michael Smiley. There's lots more. And yeah, I'd be here all day if I had to rattle them all off. So go and explore it, and I guarantee you'll see an episode in there by one of your favourite artists. And yeah, so go and do that. And if you'd really like to support the podcast, you can support it and get even more content on my Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And then over there, I think it's 79p or a dollar a month, and for that you get weekly video episodes. There's an archive in there of maybe 100 radio shows where I play records and talk about them. There's lots and lots of upfront releases. If you get, you know, so you get to hear the, you know, the episode sometimes like 2-3 months before it gets a general release. So yeah, and it's a nice little place to be. And it, yeah, $1 a month. Like, what can you get for $1 a month these days? Let me tell you, access to another whole vault of the beaten track goodness. So so yeah, go and sign up and be yeah, and be one of the Patreons. Oh, that last bit made it sound like you was about to join a cult. It's not a cult. I should clarify that. It's a nice place. all right. Anyway, I digress. Please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beaten Track podcast with Andrew Marlin of Watch House. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beaten Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we're recording. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I mean, this is an audio, so people haven't can't see what I can see. You are literally in a wardrobe.
I am. It's the only quiet place I can go sometimes. So I'll take it where I can. Yeah.
Aside from the wardrobe, whereabouts are you generally?
At home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So right in the middle of the state.
So what's the situation like? I should say we're recording this on the 15th of July. This is in the week that the UK have announced that as of next week, all restrictions are dropped. So just wondering what the situation's like where you are, mate.
It's a little bit of that and also still, you know, a lot of distancing going on and people still trying to kind of work their way back out in the world. It's a little... It's odd, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you go some places in the States and no one's wearing masks and everybody's just going about their daily life like they did pre-pandemic. But yeah, I don't know. It feels good to be getting back to normal a little bit, but also, trying to not be completely fearful for your life and for your family's safety when you go out to just buy some milk.
You know? Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. And just to, you know, the last kind of thing really on the situation that we've all been sort of thrust into, them last sort of 14, 15 months, how have you found that personally as well as creatively?
Personally, it's been kind of a wild time, you know. I mean, I've always had travel to distract me from myself. So I feel like I've gotten to know myself pretty well the past 15 months or 16 months, however long it's been. And I think through that creatively, actually, I've had little spurts of creativity, but for the most part, I've been spending more time just staring out windows, you know, and doing that whole thing. But I think, you know, I think one thing I keep trying to do is remind myself that this whole pandemic wasn't about me. You know, it's we've lost a lot of people in the world, and I think as exciting as it is to get to hop on stage again these past few months and to get to travel, it's really grounding and humbling to remember how many people have suffered through this thing, you know, and how many people have lost loved ones.
Absolutely.
and I'm one of the fortunate ones that didn't lose too many people to COVID, you know, and
yeah.
also got to hang out with my wife and daughter the whole time, you know, so
yeah.
All in all, can't complain, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about something that always, I'm sure, puts a smile on your face, and that's records. And I'm going to ask you, please, Andy, for track one, to tell me the song that you think has the greatest ever intro.
I would say One by Metallica has the greatest intro, and one of the most deceiving ones, because it starts out so beautiful, and Kirk Hammett's playing is just so melodic and toneful. And then, you know, they kind of lay the bed for this wonderful story throughout the whole song. And it just gets progressively more and more heavy until you're just banging your head away, you know. I love that transition, you know, and the way they just take you through all of these different different feelings and different moods. And some of those earlier Metallica records just do that so wonderfully. So,
I mean, a lot of people, you know, when they talk about Metallica, you know, they reference that track, and rightly so. It's you know, it's an absolute monster of a record. And I think now, if we, you know, Metallica being one of the biggest bands on the planet, I find it really interesting. In regards to intros and song length, I think what's one, maybe 7-8 minutes, something like that, isn't it? So it's a long old tune. And I just wonder now, like with, you know, major labels, would they sort of step on that a little bit now and go, right, hang on, no, look, we need a 3-minute radio edit of this. And I just wonder the way that the industry appears to be, and the way that, attention spans of lots of, well, I'm talking about my daughters that whose thumbs move very fast nowadays. I just wonder if any of these sort of things that are changing in the way that people listen to music have any effect on you when you sit down to write a song.
I try to stay out of that whole mentality. You know, I when I sit down to write, I try to figure out how I feel and not how everybody else feels, you know, and then hopefully that translates and somebody else can latch on to those feelings and make them relevant for themselves. But it does seem like, you know, everything's getting a little more streamlined, and you just want to get ideas across as soon as possible and like kind of almost hit people over the head with a melodic idea, you know. But, you know, there's a lot of bands out there that are doing wonderfully subtle stuff and making beautiful records that I think once, you know, society realizes that their attention span is dwindling and we kind of somehow or another probably create an app to which is already created to improve our attention spans. I think there's a lot of wonderful music being made right now for people that can actually pay attention. So
that's one of the great things I think about podcasts. I think that podcasts aren't getting shorter. If anything, you know, some podcasts go on for like, you know, 2-3 hours. And I do think that's an opportunity where you're not skipping to the next track. You know, you're not, your attention span isn't really, you know, there's nothing else to go to. If you, you know, if you've got an engaging conversation, then, you know, like a What's Going On or something like that, you've got that kind of, that body of work, that piece of art to get lost in, and you're not trying to get that quick fix. Do you know what I mean? And I hope that major labels and pop records do slow down a little bit, because I'd hate to think that commercial pop records are going to end up being like, you know, 50 seconds long, and, you know, released only on TikTok and things like that. That terrifies me, that I think, you know, I worry enough about the fact that, you know, in regards to lots of, sort of big commercial artists, their records are not necessarily album sales. People are just cherry picking tracks, and that worries me, that, you know, records or albums aren't being listened to as a body of work. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one thing with podcasts too is that a lot of times they're live, and so you get this sense of immediacy and a like just in the moment feel that, you know, I think like 30, 40 years ago, you would have you get a lot of that from pop music, because the just the way in which people recorded, they didn't have the options to nitpick and to make things perfect. There was, you're actually hearing a performance, you know, where some of those solos were just done live, you know, just off the cuff, which to me, like, just conjures up all sorts of natural scenes. You know what I mean? Like, nature is inherently not perfect, and it's a little asymmetrical, and it's, but it's really beautiful in that asymmetry and that non-perfectness, you know? And so, that's one of the things that I hope music doesn't lose is, you know, it's just this sense of wildness, and just, you know, imperfectness. Yeah. So,
I'm going to take you back for track two, and I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Oh, yeah. It was fun, like, reading these questions beforehand, just, like, thinking about these things. But I remember when, I guess I was probably, like, 16, a good friend of mine had just got subwoofers in his car, and so he was like, come on, man, I gotta show you this record, you know? So here I am thinking he's going to put on some hip hop track, you know? And we were just going to just dance away like crazy, which would have been fun. And we did afterwards probably, but we sat in the car and he put on the Magical Mystery Tour by the Beatles. And if you've never listened to the Magical Mystery Tour with, like really good speakers, you know, with a lot of low end and, the whole record is super powerful, and there's so many textures and there's so many just wonderful elements to every song. But Strawberry Fields, when that came on, it was like, dude, this is, I want this, you know what I mean? Like I need this in my life all the time. And I think that was really when just the whole idea of making a record and making a recording just made its way into my heart, and it's like, this is what I want to do. I want to figure out how to like put these tones together. I want to figure out how to put these, just all of these different elements, you know, together and make one beautiful stereo track. Like that's my dream, you know, and I have not come close to achieving Strawberry Fields, but
there's a lot of people out there striving for that, brother.
Yeah, exactly. But that one song is like, you could listen to it 1,000 times, and I have, and still hear new things about it, and I love that. And it's so subtle, you know what I mean? Like the raw elements of that tune are super simple and very catchy, but then it's the underbelly that like keeps you coming back and trying to figure it out. So
even at quite a sort of, you know, formative age, when you was listening to music, would you start to sort of try and deconstruct it and work out the different elements and how it was, you know, layered and put together?
I'd just put on headphones, and I feel like the way I think about the stereo field now is I'll close my eyes and I'll just try to look at the thing that I'm listening to in the stereo field. So you can actually, like, it gets to a point where you can kind of just point to little things, you know, and it's fun to put on headphones and literally explore this whole, just world between your left and right ears. there's so much happening there. And if you get to the point where you can close your eyes and start pointing at things, it almost is like going on a little journey, you know, for about 3 minutes or however long the track is. So,
okay, well, I'm going to keep you in the formative years. And for track three, I'm going to ask you for the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please.
Yeah, that one... I went with Looks Just Like the Sun by Broken Social Scene. I got turned on to that record actually right after I graduated high school, but it was still, you know, very much in that high school mentality where I was hanging out with all my school buddies and we were just, you know, going camping on the lake or just always hanging together and basically never sleeping and partying way too hard. But it was so much fun. You know, there was not a whole lot of responsibility there, especially for that first summer after we graduated. And I remember hearing that record that summer and just being completely awed by it. It was, you know, what a magical record that is. And
incredible record.
Yeah, I think, it's like a conglomerate, right? It's like, it's a lot of artists coming together to make this record. I feel like you can hear that. There's so much creative energy on that and so much excitement. And it feels like a hang, you know, it's like when you put that record on, it feels like you're at a party. It's like a little sonic party, but Looks Like the Sun, Looks Just Like the Sun. That song in particular, it's so chill, you know, and it's very acoustic, which I really gravitate towards in general, just those tones. But there's a lot achieved there with very few lyrics and very few moves. It's a pretty basic track in terms of the structure of it. And I just love the way that sounds. And I bet I listened to that song 5,000 times that summer. So, yeah.
How was school as an experience?
School was something that I just had to get through, you know. I always, for some reason, you know, class was never very difficult for me. I could kind of, like, get by without studying much. But I would just sit there and, like, write songs during class, you know, on little pieces of notebook paper or, like, write down ideas of things that I would have. And I basically, like, my days were... like just full of little things that I had to do in order to get to the point where I could finally get home and pick up a guitar. And I wasn't that present for a lot of those things, you know? So, yeah, I'm sure looking back on it now, I wish I'd have paid a little more attention, but that's the way it goes. Right.
Was music something, you know, at a young age, you knew that was going to be something that you wanted to do?
Yeah, it's all I did. As soon as I picked up the guitar in the ninth grade, I just never put it down and was always writing and listening and, you know, trying to find other people to play with.
Growing up where you grew up and you know, in those early bands and things like that and experimenting with music, did it feel that a career in music was something that was possible from where you was from? You know, was there bands that had come from where you were that had you know, that were inspirational for you?
Yeah, there were a lot of really great cover bands where I grew up. And so, like, a lot of good bar bands and, you know, there'd be a lot of people playing in church and, you know, playing a lot of spiritual music. But I think, like, I didn't know too many people playing original music in my hometown. And so, but luckily I had this wonderful friend, Hillman, who was a like incredibly creative person. It was super encouraging, you know, and his dad as well would always really encourage us to just write our own stuff. He's like, y'all, you can do it, man. It's good. You know, people need this. Not everybody needs cover bands, you know? Yeah. So, and so he really pushed us to write our own stuff and explore what we wanted to get out of the music. But it wasn't until I moved to Chapel Hill when I was about 20 that I really started meeting people writing their own songs and doing this for a living. And it shined a whole new light on what a career could be. And, the difference in making it big and actually having like a decent middle class working music job, you know, getting to play music and getting to travel. So
growing up, was there records on indoors, you know, at home?
Sorry, what was that last question?
Was there records on, you know, when you were small, like at home? Was it a musical family?
Very musical family. We didn't listen to many records, but my mom played piano. Her mom played piano, and my sister also is a piano player. So I grew up around just a lot of people just playing music, you know. Yeah. And I always wanted that. I just loved how I could sit there and watch my mom sit down at the piano and basically emerge like 3 hours later, just having played all of these different songs. And she was really good at being able to string together all of these pieces. So she'd be in the middle of playing one and be about to finish it, and she would just think of another one and just go right into it, you know? And I love that. I love the freedom that she had on the keys, and it just seemed like she was just swimming in her mind. And I always wanted that. And so I never took to the piano. I can play some piano just because I grew up with it. I get it. But it's not something that when I sit down to play that I really want to dive into. But the guitar was like kind of the stepping stone on that path. But then when I came to the mandolin, it was like, I think something about the timbre of that instrument with the double strings, I think kind of reminds me a little bit of the piano. And then also just how the tuning of it is so, it basically is the same as a fiddle.
Yeah.
You can play all of these fiddle tunes and just really navigate melodies pretty simply on the mandolin. And that one, it just became this little puzzle to crack that I just like every time I pick it up, I find new things. And because it's such a small fretboard, you can get across some pretty intricate ideas by spanning a few octaves.
Yeah.
You know, pretty easily. I mean, you can get some good stretches going on there, but yeah, it's just a wonderfully creative instrument that I've found like an endless supply of creativity there. So
it's one of my favorite instruments. And I think when I was maybe 16, I heard Green by REM, and I'd never really heard a mandolin used in kind of popular guitar music, I guess. Maybe I have and really sort of picked up on it massively, but hearing some of the slower tracks on Green and just thinking, oh, holy shit, this sounds beautiful. And then obviously fast forward a year or so to Out of Time. And then I think, you know, the mandolin and REM then become, you know, something that you push together straight away. You get the opening chords to Losing My Religion to the end of that track. And there's so many beautiful records on that song. And I think I heard that Peter Buck said that he just got bored of the guitar for a bit and just picked up a mandolin and just wrote two incredible records with it. And it's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful instrument.
Yeah, very versatile. And it I think too, where because of the tuning of it and where it sits, you know, in that octave, it has a really nice cut to it that I don't know. There's something about where it sits in a mix, whether it's a, you know, a rock and roll band or a string band.
Yeah.
I think it adds a lot of power and a lot of weight to the whatever band it's in. So
absolutely. Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humor in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this, they have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Last track in the formative years. Andrew, I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember buying from a record store, please.
Yeah, it was Led Zeppelin 2. I remember when I first heard Ramble On, it was like this, you know, it was another Strawberry Fields moment, you know. I think that might have been before Strawberry Fields. I think I was probably like 14 or 15 when I went to go buy Led Zeppelin 2. But my friend's dad is a good guitar player. And so he showed me how to play Ramble On one day, and I was like, I've never heard this song. And he was like, what? You've never heard Ramble On by Led Zeppelin? You got to go check this out. He's like, it's one of the coolest acoustic guitar pieces, you know, just because you can just move this E chord around. I went and bought that album. And when I put Ramble On for the first time, I love the tone of that song, you know, like how those acoustic instruments are all just making this incredibly, just a really pulsing tune, you know. And I think acoustic instruments have a cool power in that sense where they can be really melodic, but they can also just be so drum-like and just move so much air when you hit them. And I think all of that air just translates straight to just stirring some innate part in all of us that just makes us want to dance to a drum, you know? And I think that song captures that beautifully, where it's just this wonderfully melodic pulsing piece. And then, obviously Robert Plant's singing is just out of this world, and, yeah, and just makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck every time he hits a note. So, that was a proud day when I went to pick up that album.
Wonderful. Yeah. I mean, in regards to record stores, were they important places for you?
Definitely. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, you'd walk in, you can talk to the people behind the desk and listen to what they're playing on the speakers. And I think especially in those years, I was just wanting as much music as possible, you know, and to hear as many songs as possible. And so you walk into a record store and there's just all of this possibility, you know, and it's really cool to think about how much depth is there. It's almost like a little black hole, you know. You could go just get sucked into this record store and never come out and have an endless supply of music to listen to. It's a beautiful thing. And you know, to me, I think the older I get, the more I love just the whole concept of this really simple surface. And then you fall just slightly below that surface, and then you realize that there's just an endless depth there. And some of my favorite records sound like that. And I think a record store definitely has that same thing where, you know, on the surface, it's just a bunch of cardboard and plastic, but then, you know, you start diving into each of those little pieces and there's a whole world there and a whole like perception shift, you know, from the start of one record to the end of it.
Yeah.
You can be a completely different person at the end of that and look at life in a completely new light. So a lot of beauty there. I hope record stores always are around because they're wonderful.
Are you someone that if you're touring, you know, and you get to a town, if there's a record store, are you going in?
Yeah. Usually, you know, just because I feel like record stores are very often, just kind of at the heart of a music scene, you know? And so it's a good way to meet people, and it's a good way to kind of see what folks in the area are really into. You know, and so it's because this is what we do, not only for a living, but, you know, are very passionate about. I think it's a good way to kind of get a feel for the town that you're visiting, you know, is to go see the local record store.
Definitely. Well, I'm going to move things on. And cool. I want to talk about clubbing. You've sent me your tracks over, and there was a note with this one. And I've got to say, of the 320 episodes of this podcast I've done, I'd say 300 people have echoed what you said.
Really?
Yeah. Nice. So you're not alone. You wasn't the only guy that weren't out there raving. So I'm going to ask you about the song that soundtracked your years clubbing, but I should add this when I send these questions out, that this can be hanging out in a dive bar. This can be a local rock club. This hasn't got to be glow sticks, shirt off, you know, hands in the air, raving to EDM. This, you know, this can be whatever felt like your kind of, you know, those years where you found your tribe and you go out and party together. And so it's more around that.
Okay. Well, then if that's the case, I might change my answer.
Go for it.
I would say the record Blood on the Tracks was where I finally started. If we're talking about like being in bars and actually finding our people, I was always an early Dylan fan because I love the way Dylan plays guitar. For one, he's a great guitar player, especially when it comes time to carry a song. You know, I feel like his playing always serves a song. So when I told some friends of mine that I was starting to get to know here in town, in Chapel Hill, where I live now, that I was a Dylan fan, they said, "Well, dude, Blood on the Tracks, right?" And I was like, "I've never listened to that record. What are you talking about?" And so
I can't believe how many moments you've had in your life where people are like, "Oh, you've not heard Ramble On. Not heard this."
Well, it's like those are maybe those are just really formative moments for me. So they stick out.
Absolutely.
You know? But it is that thing. It's like once you discover a new track or a new artist, you know, it's life changing. Mm. And it makes, especially as a musician and a songwriter, it completely changes the way I think about music. Definitely those moments stick out to me. So they just went to the jukebox and put on Blood on the Tracks because obviously it was there because everybody else knows this record and I don't. We just sat there and we just drank beers and we just didn't talk for the entire length of this record. So from there, obviously I went to the local record store and I bought the album, and went home with it. But I just remember that moment so clearly because, you know, Dylan on a lot of the records I'd been listening to was more philosophical and like was kind of like exploring, you know, the natural world a little bit more, and on Blood on the Tracks he was pretty vicious, you know, just baring his teeth, and it was refreshing to hear, and it tapped into a different, like a meaner side of me too that I don't entertain too often, so it felt good. It was almost like a release, you know, to hear someone's anger just laid out so beautifully on a record.
It's so brilliant, isn't it, how anger can come across and through music and be a, you know, somewhere where you can personally kind of let off steam or feel, you know, channel that and use it to propel you or whatever. And I find that really interesting that you kickstarted this chat by talking about Metallica, you know, which is a band that I still play Metallica records at my venue to the next generation of 18-year-olds that still, you know, lose their shit to that, lose their shit to Rage Against the Machine. And absolutely, you know, this is 30 years later, but then you can have something as, on the surface of it, something far more gentle, like Bob Dylan, but equally, if not more, wise, angry, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the you know, there's vitriol on that album. Like,
absolutely.
And that fascinates me that it's not got to be heavy music comes in different forms. It hasn't necessarily got to have a distortion pedal, you know?
True that. Yeah, and I think lyrics can be just so vicious, you know, and can really stir you. But, you know, I mean, society definitely puts a cap on our anger, you know, and won't really allow us to entertain that. And so, but it's still there. And like, we have to get that out somehow, and we have to feel those releases. And it's a great thing that there are bands like Metallica and Pantera out there that put out these wonderfully aggressive records that we can all just, you know, just sweat to and like, and, you know, turn red in the face and get that anger out. But then also, it's almost like with Blood on the Tracks, it's almost like it's less of that feeling of wanting to punch something and more of that feeling of just that brooding kind of, you know, sitting back, you know, maybe, I don't know, drinking like a sinister drink, you know, with, with like really nice ice cubes, you know, and you're just like, just kind of stirring it around, looking at the world, you know, just
contemplating your move.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the pre-anger, you know?
Yeah. But, sitting there like Dr. Evil.
Exactly. But anger comes in so many forms. And, you know, I think it is awesome that it can also be translated so wonderfully on a gentle record, like you just said. That's awesome.
Absolutely. I'm going to take you home. And for track six, favorite song from an artist from your home county, hometown, wherever you want.
Yeah, I forget the song that I chose. It was a Phil Cook song.
Juniper?
Juniper, yes.
Which I'd never heard until today. And oh,
it's a beautiful track, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a... Man, Phil has such a great explorative spirit on whatever instrument he's playing, and I've never talked to him about that track specifically, but it sounds like he was just riffing, and that melody just kind of poked its way out, and then he was like, "Oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll just play it a few more times," you know, and it has that sense of immediacy to it. And I don't know if it was written like right before he tracked it or if he had been holding on to that one for a while, but something about the recording of that track to me, it feels like you're hearing that song being birthed right then. And I love that track. It's a great one for if I want to go for a run or just go for a little drive, or just waking up in the morning and having my first cup of coffee, you know, it's kind of one of those one size fits all tunes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, for the last track, you get to play Tastemaker and turn someone onto something new. You can bestow now your ramble on moment and offer it to someone else now. And I'm going to ask you for a song that many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Yeah, it's a song by Antonio Carlos Jobim, and I don't know how to say it. It's like Batidana or something. I don't know. I'm not familiar, but with how to say it. But I can tell you that it is such a peaceful track that when you put it on, that whole album Wave is it's a great album with all of these beautiful French horns, you know, sections and some really beautiful string sections, some incredibly rhythmic and, expressive guitar parts. But that track in particular, Batidina, I have to look up how to say it, is there's like whole sections where the horns are basically just droning. And it's almost like he was playing with emptiness on the track. And so when you feel that, you know, those spots where you think that the French horns are going to come in with this like wonderful melody and then they don't, it's almost like, it draws attention to the blank spaces in the song. And, which I think nowadays is like you're saying, like probably wouldn't happen that often, you know, to where space is actually, is the goal, is the achievement, you know? But I think he does it beautifully on this track. And, throughout the whole record, but especially this one, to where it almost suggests to your mind, you know, turn off for a second. It's okay. You're fine. This is exactly where you're supposed to be, right here, right now, listening to this music. And every time I put that album on, and it gets to that track, that's how I feel, is that, you know, everything is as, you know, as it should be. And, you know, life's not terrible. So,
well, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast so people can go and check out all of these songs that we've spoken about today. It would appear that the second half of this year is going to be a lot more positive than the first half and 2020. With that in mind, Andrew, what are you looking forward to most from this year personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Just getting out and playing some shows, you know, finally, doing a lot of festivals this summer, and not gearing up for a big tour until 2022, when hopefully things are even more back to normal. But even just in the past 2 months, you know, going out and seeing people I haven't seen in, you know, 16 months, and being able to give them a hug, and not feeling weird about just being in someone else's presence. It just feels great. And I think, you know, I mean, if, you know, with everybody that we lost this year, and with just the way things went, where everyone was so isolated, I know for me personally, it was a really good reminder that, you know, the reason I do what I do, you know, part of it is for self-expression, but another part of it is the community of it and the people that I've gotten to know here and doing this. And I don't think I would have pinpointed that in 2019. I don't think I would have told you that my whole reason for doing this is community, but I definitely see that now. And so now going out and seeing some of the people that I hadn't seen now for a while, that just serves as such a reminder to be like, dude, what's up? This is exactly why I do this. So we can hang out and we can play music together, or we can talk about records, or we can just go get a cup of coffee and like figure things out, you know? So a lot of that in my future, and really looking forward to that.
Wonderful. So, wonderful. Amen. It's been an absolute pleasure talking records with you today.
Man.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's your lot. There you go. Finito. Kaput. That was Andrew of Watch House. What a delightful human being he was, and what a lovely warm chat we had. And I'm recording this right after we finished that chat, and I can't tell you enough, like, when I've mentioned about artist playlists to go and explore, then them last two tracks that Andrew chose are absolute beauties. I presume, I'm being presumptuous here, I presume the other tracks that we mentioned you probably were aware of, but the last two, oh my god, Go check them out, because they're beautiful, and obviously as well, you know, I'm again presuming you're all up to speed on the musical output of Watch House. If you're not, oh gosh, I'm going to put some of that on the playlist as well. Go and have a listen; it'll break your heart. It's beautiful. Right, as I mentioned at the beginning, there's a Patreon available, and there's all sorts of stuff, archives and merchandise and everything, and you can find out about it all at the website, which is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. In the meantime, look after each other, be excellent, and I'll see you next time. Much love. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.